For the reading of the scriptures together. And we'll read from the book of Acts, from chapter 15, and from Acts 15, 36, and then we'll read through to chapter 16 and verse 5. So 15, 36 through 16, 5. It's on page 1176 in the Pew Bibles. And after some days, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let us return and visit the brothers in every city where we proclaimed the word of the Lord and see how they are." Now Barnabas wanted to take with them John, called Mark. But Paul thought best not to take with them one who had withdrawn from them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. And there arose a sharp disagreement, so that they separated from each other. And Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus. But Paul chose Silas and departed, having been commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord. And he went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. And Paul came also to Derbe and to Lystra. And a disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a Jewish woman who was a believer, but his father was a Greek. And he was well spoken of by the brothers at Lystra and Iconium. And Paul wanted Timothy to accompany him, and he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in those places, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. And as they went on their way through the cities, they delivered to them for observance the decisions that had been reached by the apostles and elders who were in Jerusalem. So the churches were strengthened in the faith, and they increased in numbers daily. This is the word of the Lord. May be seated. So what you have here in this text, you see the reviving of the churches. There is strengthening. There is invigorating. There is revival that occurs in certain of these churches. These are churches that had been planted by the Apostle Paul and Barnabas as they had gone out on their first missionary journey. And I want you to notice something about what happens here. And I want you to think about a question. What is the natural tendency of things? Is the natural tendency to get better and better? If left alone, is the tendency to get better and better, or is the tendency to decline and to grow worse and worse? And what happens to your yard if you do not mow it, even for a week? What happens? Okay, what happens, children? What would happen if you? For lunch this afternoon, if you had yourself a little bowl of ice cream and you were so excited about your ice cream, but you're also so excited about playing with your friends that you forget about your bowl of ice cream and you leave it on the table, what's going to happen to that bowl of ice cream 4 hours later? It's going to be a milkshake. The natural tendency of things is to melt down. The natural tendency is to decline. one of the members of the Constitutional Convention after the United States Constitution was written, and then it had to be debated and ratified in the states. One of the members of that Constitution said to one of the citizens from outside, he said, well, what we've done is we've created a republic, if you can keep it. Now, the natural tendency of things is to decline. Even churches that are planted by the Apostle Paul, if they are not faithfully tended, if they are not shepherded and pastored, those very congregations will tend to decline. And so what is necessary? What's necessary is the breathing of life. What's necessary is a reinvigorating of the soul. What's necessary is the stabilizing of the churches. Our tendency is for our knees to grow weak, for our hands to fall, for our head to droop, and the continual need is for a reinvigoration, for a reinfusing of power. And what do you see here in this text? You see there is a reviving, there is a reinvigorating of the churches. You see it, chapter 16, verse 5. Read these words with me. Look at this. So the churches were strengthened in the faith. Y'all, what is revival? When we seek the Lord of glory to revive His church, what are we seeking? What are we pleading? We're pleading that His church would be established in the faith, that she would be anchored, that she would have convictions that are tethered, not to the passing winds of the culture. No, we are seeking that she would have convictions that are tethered to the truth as it is in Jesus. These churches, they were strengthened. You look at verse 5, strengthened in what? They were strengthened in the faith. They were strengthened in what they believed. Christians, what is it that you believe? To experience revival, to experience the glory of God passing by in the means of grace, is to experience a deepening of convictions, a deepening of truth, a deepening of what you hold dear. These congregations, you look at this language, they were strengthened in the faith and they increased in numbers daily. There is nothing more pressing. There is nothing more vital for the Lord's bride in this our day than for us to be strengthened in the faith and to increase in number. Exactly what you see here in chapter 16. That the glory of the Lord would be reflected in the lives of His people. But how does it come about? How are these churches strengthened in the faith? How are they revived? How do they have new life that's breathed into them? Well, the Lord uses means. Things don't simply happen at the snap of our fingers. The Lord uses means. How are these churches revived? Well, I want you to see, first of all, they're revived. Look back at verse 36. Y'all, they are revived through personal shepherding. There is in-person, face-to-face shepherding. Look at this in verse 36. After some days, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let us return and visit. Let us go back. And let's sit and let's talk. Let's have an at-length discussion. Let's go back and shepherd and pastor." And where are they going to go? You look at verse 36. "Let's return and visit the brothers in every city where we proclaim the word of the Lord." So they're going to retrace their steps. What have they done? They've gone on this first missionary journey, and the providence of God has caused the word to triumph in specific places. Churches have been planted. Souls have been drawn to the light. And how? How have they been drawn? They've been drawn, look at verse 36, where we proclaimed the word of the Lord. So this is going to be a follow-up of the preached word. They have proclaimed the truth, but the Apostle Paul, as a faithful shepherd, is not content with simply proclaiming the truth. He wants to go back and get in front of these people face to face and see how they are. Look at this language in verse 36. And see how they are. Oh, he is going to take this word that's been preached and he's going to see how is it working out in their soul. How is it working in their convictions, in their beliefs? What do they believe about certain things? How is their practice? He's proclaimed a whole Christ, a beautiful, majestic Jesus. If he were to ask them, what do you think of Jesus? Where have your thoughts been regarding the Lord Christ in recent weeks? He wants to see how they are. He wants to ask searching questions. You know, that's what you ought to expect. That is what a shepherding ministry is. Oh, when we seek, when we pray, when we long for revival, we are asking the Spirit to give shepherding ministries. And he will put people in front of us who are willing to ask, how is it with your soul? When is the last time someone asked you, how is your soul? When's the last time someone asked you, are you all right? Is everything right with you? Oh, the apostle, he wants to go and he wants to see how these people are. How are churches strengthened? How does the Spirit of Christ revive congregations and even presbyteries and whole regional churches? How does he do it? He does it through face-to-face personal shepherding. And they will spread the sparks of heavenly love and truth. And those sparks will spread and they will reignite, they will rekindle the flame in these congregations. Now, you know these people. You know these people who, when you're with them, it makes your heart glow. And those of you familiar with the film Master and Commander, and the famous scene at the dinner table between the officers, the naval officers, and they begin discussing this British naval commander, Lord Nelson, and this young man sitting at the table, he just wants to know, what is Lord Nelson like? Very famous for the battles which he waged on the seas, and he doesn't want to hear the military battles or the funny stories. He wants to know, what sort of man was he like? And after toying with the young man just a bit, one of the other officers, he responds, that when you were with Nelson, you felt your heart glow. You know these people. Who, when you're with them, you catch the sparks and you feel your soul glow. Now, the Apostle Paul was one of those men. Barnabas was one such man. And they will go and they will visit these places where they've been. And when you read the Apostle Paul's letters, you can see this man was absolutely overjoyed to be with his people. He loved his people with a fervor, with a passion, with an earnestness. He loved to be with his people. He wants to go and see how they are. And that's how the Lord revives his church, through personal shepherding. How is it with your soul? And what have you read of late in the Scriptures? What truth has gripped you? What question has perplexed you? What hopes do you have as you look at the future? What desires are you seeking to submerge beneath the fear and the love of the Lord? What uncertainties do you have? He wants to see how these people are. Second thing I want you to see that the Spirit uses as He revives His church, He uses personal shepherding. He also uses the multiplying of efforts. Under the providence of God, the truth of Christ is being spread to different parts of the Mediterranean world, and there must be a multiplication of efforts. There must be a multiple deployment of the apostles. There must be a multiple pronged mission in order to reach the highest number of places possible. There will be a multiplication of efforts. Now, in order to secure that multiplication of efforts, what did we sing just a few minutes ago? God moves in a mysterious way, His wonders to perform. He plants His footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm. Now, there will be a storm of conflict between two giants of the faith. There is a storm of disagreement. And you see this in verses 37 through 40. And now Barnabas is the man who introduced Saul of Tarsus to the disciples in Jerusalem. He is the man who encouraged Saul. He encouraged Paul in the faith. He encouraged the disciples to hear Paul and to accept him as a disciple. Now, Barnabas is an encourager. Barnabas wants to take, verse 37, he wants to take John, also called Mark. The problem, as the Apostle Paul sees it, is that John Mark might have hosted a prayer meeting in his home when Peter was in prison. John Mark might have gone with us at the start of the last missionary journey, but John Mark left. He didn't stay with us. He departed. And so the apostle Paul and Barnabas, they disagree. Verse 38, Paul thought best not to take with them one who had withdrawn from them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. And so there's a sharp disagreement. What would a sharp disagreement between two giants of the faith look like? Two men who love the Lord deeply. Two men who are observing the same set of facts and yet interpreting them in different ways. Two men who deeply love the truth and they love the church. Two men who deeply love one another. What would a sharp disagreement look like between them? They have different criteria. Paul wants a man who has a proven resolve, a proven perseverance, someone whom he knows will not shift gears and turn a different path on their missionary journey. He wants to know, are we going to do this together? Barnabas, his concern is, yes, John Mark, he might have made a mistake, but just as you, Saul of Tarsus, just as you were accepted and brought alongside, so we can take John Mark and bring him along on this journey. You can see what sort of sharp disagreement, a difference of vision would have taken place here. These men are looking at the same facts with a different lens, a different set of criteria. That happens. We are but men who are fallen, and human beings that are fallen will have sharp disagreements. And what do you do? What happens here? verse 39, Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus. Guess where Barnabas is from? Barnabas is from Cyprus. But Paul chose Silas and departed, having been commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord. Apparently, the church sides with the Apostle Paul. They think he is more in the right on this particular issue. They send him and Silas off with their blessing. But there's an... How do you part ways? How do you disagree graciously? Y'all, there is an unwritten history here. There is a future decades down the line that you don't see in this text. Do you know, in the Apostle Paul's writings, he will speak glowingly of John Mark, the very man whom he did not wish to have with him on this second missionary journey. He will describe John Mark as useful to me for ministry. What's happening here? What's happening, y'all, is that under the providence of God, God moves in a mysterious way, and he will use all things. He will even use the imperfections and the sinfulness of men, and he knows in his infinite wisdom how to turn it for his own glory and purposes. What is his purpose? His purpose is to revive the spirit and soul of these congregations, to go in these very places where Christ has been preached. Christ was preached at Cyprus. Who will go to Cyprus and reinvigorate and breathe life into the believers there? It's none other than Barnabas and John Mark. Who will go into Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches? It's none other than the Apostle Paul and Silas. There is a multiplication of efforts. You know, you don't know. You never know how the Lord of glory in his infinite wisdom will use even the sharp disagreements between the people of God. You never know. But what do you seek? You seek the majesty and the glory of Christ. You seek the reviving of the church. And what happens? You know, there's this disagreement. There's a parting of ways that becomes a two-pronged mission. A two-pronged mission. And in Paul's mission, who does he meet? He meets this man whom we will hear of more in the book of Acts. He meets this young man, Timothy. Chapter 16, verse 1, he's the son of a Jewish woman and a Greek father. Since they're in the season where circumcision is now not commanded, it's an indifferent thing. He says to Timothy, look, we're going into some Jewish areas. I need you to submit to this particular issue for the sake of our mission to the Jewish areas. So he has him circumcised. Not as a requirement for obedience, but for the sake of mission. Well aware that opens a whole can of questions. But for now, just take that point. This is the season where circumcision is an indifferent matter. It's not required. They've settled this at the Council of Jerusalem. But for the sake, you look at verse 3. Paul wanted Timothy to accompany him. He took him and circumcised him. Why? Because of the Jews who were in those places. It's a multiplication of efforts. How does the Lord of glory revive his church? He does so through personal shepherding and through mysterious, bizarre means and ways. But the last thing I want you to see is that he revives his church through the deliverance of the decrees. There were decrees that were written. There were doctrines that were decided at the Council of Jerusalem. And far from being an indifferent thing, church government is actually used of the Spirit of the Lord to revive and to reinvigorate His church. It's not just a dry, dusty old thing. No, He uses the shepherding. He uses the decree of the council. He uses the decision that was reached by this council of apostles and elders. He uses it to strengthen the churches. Look at verse 4. As they went on their way through the cities, what do they do? What do they carry with them? They're not just carrying a suitcase. What do they carry? Look at verse 4. They delivered to them for observance. These issues were not merely good ideas. They weren't just suggestions. No, these were decrees to be obeyed. They were to be observed. That they were not to impose the ceremonial law as a requirement for discipleship and salvation in these churches. They were not to impose the ceremonial Levitical code upon the Gentiles. They were to solely insist upon the proclamation of Christ, that the preaching of the truth, that by the grace of the Lord Jesus, we shall be saved. That is what they were to insist on. You look at verse 4. They delivered to them for observance the decisions that had been reached by the apostles and elders who were in Jerusalem. Now, what do you see here? What do you see about when the church courts gather? What are they to do? They are to be shepherds. Yes, there is a shepherding work that happens as the apostles go into specific cities and congregations. But y'all, they are no less shepherds when they're gathering as a court, when they're gathering as an assembly. And when they gather as an assembly, what are they to speak? Are they to legislate new doctrines? Are they to legislate new laws? Are they to legislate a new message? You know, what should you expect the shepherds of the church to do when they meet in assembly? You should expect them, out of a deep, enriched love for the people and a zeal for the glory of Christ, you should expect them to shepherd, to speak as shepherds, and to simply minister the word. Not to legislate the word, not to add to the word, but to simply deliver, to declare the word. Some of y'all know the term ministerial and declarative. What's the church's mission? It is ministerial and declarative, meaning it is to minister the word, to administer healing to those whose hearts are sore and sick and dying. It is to declare the law of Christ. That's why church assemblies are called a court. They're called a court because they're not legislating new law. They are simply deciding on what has been written. They've consulted what has been written, what has been penned and inspired by the Spirit of Christ. When we plead that the Spirit of God would revive His church, what are we asking? We're asking that there would be a faithful delivery of the decrees of Christ, that there would be a faithful ministry of the word, that there would be a faithful, the key word here is faithful, that there would be a faithful delivering of the truth as it is in Jesus, that the church courts, that the elders, that the shepherds of the church, when they speak, they would solely consult what is written, that they would not consult the passing fads of the culture or the media, know that they would speak according to what is written, that there is a regulating principle that Jesus the King will rule by His scepter. Where is Jesus now? When we plead for him to revive his church, where is Jesus now? He's there on the holy hill of Zion, seated with a righteous scepter. When we sing Psalm 45, we speak of Christ, your royal throne, O God, is forever and ever. The scepter of your kingdom is a scepter of righteousness. Oh, would you get on your knees and would you plead with this Jesus who reigns, and would you plead that his church would be revived, established, and strengthened, knowing that the tendency of things is to decay. The tendency, the natural way of things is to decline. And his church is always one generation away from decline and decay. Oh, would you plead with this risen and ascended Christ? Would you plead with him for the sake of your families, for the sake of your friends, for the sake of your children, your grandchildren? Would you plead with him most of all for the sake of his great name and honor? Nothing else matters. Nothing is more supreme than his glory and honor. Would you plead that he would strengthen his church, that he would grant to her shepherding leaders, that he would use even bizarre differences and disagreements, and that he would faithfully deliver his decrees through his church? Would you pray, verse 5, that the churches, so the churches were strengthened in the faith and they increased in numbers daily? I'm not sure that many of us in the American church today, I'm not sure that we even realize what the church is intended to be. The glory, the beauty, the power, the voice, the love . Oh, that he would give us the vision, that his spirit would descend, that he would give us that vision for what she could be, that your eyes would be lifted, that your soul would be lifted, that you would be fortified with iron in your blood. That where you are uncertain, where you are faltering, where you are struggling, that you would be revived and strengthened. That where you are sad or mournful, that you would be lifted. And that the joy of the Lord would be the theme of your song. May he revive his church, strengthen her in the faith, and increase her in number daily. Would you pray with me? O Lord, our God, would you indeed broaden our vision for the kingdom of Christ, that Jesus would reign where'er the sun does his successive journeys run. O Lord, that you would raise up shepherding ministries. Lord, that you would forgive us as shepherds where we have failed. Lord, that you would bear with your people patiently. Would you give us to bear with one another patiently? Lord, when there are disagreements, Lord, would we be able to speak without burning bridges, commending the gifts and the strengths of the other? Lord, would you give us a multiplication of efforts? Oh, Lord, would you cause your decrees to be faithfully delivered and embraced? And, O Lord, that throughout the Wiregrass and the state of Alabama and to the ends of the earth, that your people would be strengthened and increase in number. We trust your power remains the same, that your spirit remains unchanged, and it is on that power that we lean. In Jesus' name, amen.